You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Still might get it. Cassina! He does get it.
They can almost touch their place in the quarterfinals now.
Could get worse for Wales here. And Denmark's wonderful story is going to continue at this European Championship.
Wow, what a start to the last 16.
Yes, Italy turning on the style in extra time, and it was delight for Denmark.
We've also got a brilliant Sunday coming up.
Pulled through here for Lukaku to seal the deal.
Two from the penalty spot for Cristiano Ronaldo.
Ronaldo in the centre. There's goal number two.
Now it's Schick from range. It is one of the great Euro goals.
Yeah, we hear from Toby Alderweireld and Daley Blint. The last 16 of Euro 2020 is here.
It is indeed, and what a night. Welcome to the show presented by Qatar Airways. Rob's away today, so it's me, Chris Parrott, taking you through the first two last 16 matches. And doing my normal job is reporter Lindsay Hooper. Hi there, Lindsay.
Hey, Chris.
And also with us again is the former Arsenal and England striker Alan Smith, who's just been commentating on Italy against Austria. How about that for a beginning?
Yeah, I just said, didn't I? It's what tournament football or knockout football in the tournament is all about, that kind of drama and tension and all sorts of stuff happening, players just throwing the kitchen sink at it. It was a memorable match, I thought, for me. It was a great watch, compelling stuff.
Huge amount of credit to go to Austria in this one as well, Alan, because they really did manage to carry on going. I think lots of us watching thought Austria would tire, they'd be ground down by Italy. But for the 90 minutes, they were right in it. And then just when you think, oh, they're 2-0 down in extra time, they're going to switch off again, they came back.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Their energy levels were off the scale. We didn't make a substitution until late in the 90 minutes, which is a testament to their fitness, but the determination. And as you say, 2-0 down, it would have been easy for them to think, well, we've given it our all. It's not going to happen for us tonight. But they came again and they made so many chances, didn't they? Yeah. And they were snatching at things. That was their only downfall. But great credit. They couldn't have given their coach Foda much more at all. It was a brilliant effort.
Austria head out, but they have done one thing. They have scored against Italy, and that is no mean feat. We're going to hear a lot more about it very shortly, but in honour of Federico Chiesa, who got Italy's opener at Wembley, we're asking which players at Euro 2020 can transform a match in an instant, just like he did in London. Tell us who you think on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter using the hashtag Euroshow. And Lindsay and Alan, I'm going to get your thoughts on that as the show goes on, so get your thinking caps on. But let's head straight to Wembley Stadium. Italy, as we've mentioned, beat Austria. It was 0-0 after 90 minutes. All the drama came in extra time.
Chiesa! Breakthrough for Italy in extra time. What a great finish this is at a vital time. He still might get it. Pessina! He does get it.
They can almost touch that place in the quarterfinals now.
Oh, and they've got to go back. Turned in.
Kolasinac has somehow made something of it and it's just sneaked through.
Italy win. They've done it the hard way, but they've done it.
They've had to dig deep, extremely deep, to get this result tonight.
Commentary there from Martin Tyler and, of course, Alan Smith, who is alongside us now. Where to start? I guess Federico Chiesa's goal, Alan Smith, you scored a lot. And I saw someone on social media talking about the perfect hat-trick, which is always right foot, left foot header, saying that he did all those things in the movement to score the goal after being teed up.
He did, didn't he? Yeah. I mean, he had a lot of work to do at the far post there. It wasn't often that Austria conceded that amount of space, but he took full advantage of it. Berardi on that side before he went off. He just lacked that bit of quality and composure, but Chiesa found it and found it at exactly the right time with a really emphatic strike, having engineered that bit of space, cutting back inside.
Lots of shades of Euro 96 here, Alan, as well. And his dad scored for Italy in 96.
Yeah, well, I mean, his dad did be watching proudly to see his lad finish in that fashion for his country, just when his country needed him as well, just when Mancini was asking for a bit of quality in the final third that unusually Italy couldn't find up until that point.
OK, let's hear from the first goal scorer at Wembley, Federico Chiesa.
It's actually unbelievable. I cannot describe it in words. And the feeling was just amazing to score for my national team, to play at Euro 2020 with my national team. It's just amazing. It was a tough game tonight. Austria were really, really good. It was our first real elimination game in these 2 years. So I think there was a bit of emotion, but at the end, I think we deserve to go through. As I said before in previous interviews, we're just living in the moment and it's going to be great.
The second goal was scored by another sub in Pessina to make it 2-0, the 100th goal at Euro 2020 already. And then Sasha Kalajdzic, Alan, made it an exceptionally nervy finish for Italy. Now, you're a striker and you were excellent in the air. He is about 2 metres tall. Can you talk me through how on earth he managed to score from that corner when it was basically at his bootlaces and he managed to somehow get his head on it and beat Donnarumma?
Yeah, it was a weird goal. I mean, I don't know if it was off the training ground, if it was a routine or not. I thought as soon as the lad hit it from the corner, oh, he's miskicked that, he's underhit it. But Kalajdzic, he's just stooped, hasn't he? Sometimes you get it in your head that you want to head it, and then when you do finally head it, you think, oh, I should have volleyed that. But he wouldn't have thought that. Of course he wouldn't have, because, I mean, there were a couple of inches just to squeeze the ball in at the near post, past the keeper and the defender, and he managed to do it. It was an amazing goal, really.
It was, and it was the first goal that Italy have conceded in 1,168 minutes, which is almost 20 hours of football. But it wasn't enough for Austria. Now, we like to take you around Europe on this show, and we're going to head to Rome now. Our UEFA reporter Vieri Capretti is in the Eternal City. Vieri, thank you very much for coming on. What's the atmosphere like in Rome?
Ciao, everybody. I'm in Piazza del Popolo in the fan zone, and it's electric, of course, because obviously, Italy were favourites, but the way the game went, extra time, everyone's really buzzing right now.
Vieri, I've just had a look at the Piazza del Popolo and it looks absolutely exceptional. Can you talk us through what you can see right now and how many Italy fans are there celebrating this victory?
Well, because of COVID rules, there's about 1,000. That was the number admitted. They're all celebrating right now. Obviously, they're leaving the Piazza del Popolo, they're leaving the fan zone, but the atmosphere is incredible. I was here in the same Piazza del Popolo, in a different time, in a different era, back in 2012 when Italy beat Germany. I was a lot younger then, back in the semi-final, and the atmosphere was amazing then. And because of how the game went tonight, it's a very similar feeling tonight, in the sense that people are absolutely buzzing and they can't wait to be back here in Popolo when Italy play next.
And what did you think of Spinazzola's performance again? Because he's starting to shine in this tournament as one of the real standout players for Italy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been amazing. He's been amazing throughout the tournament. One thing I'll say about him, he's always been very good at club level as well. The only problem was that he's a bit injury prone. And we saw that throughout the season. For example, in the Europa League tie in the first leg against Man United, came off injured. And that's the only problem with him, if that can be called a problem. But if he's got consistency, he's an amazing player and he's showing it every single game at this tournament. And it's only because it's a short tournament, he could really make a difference.
I can absolutely imagine. And of course, Italy now will face Belgium or Portugal in the quarterfinals in Munich. It doesn't get any easier, does it?
No, it will be tough either way. Italy have played perhaps a lot of sides where Italy were the favourites. And of course, in such a tournament, at one point, you need to face the bigger side. So either Portugal or Belgium will be a real challenge for Italy. Obviously, there was a lot of enthusiasm with Italy, but perhaps they didn't face, you know, tough sides. Mancini's side are very ready for Belgium or Portugal. And obviously, the fan zone and the people in Italy are really ready for it. And it'll be amazing again.
Vieri, so are you. Thank you very much for coming on the programme. And enjoy the celebrations in Rome.
I'll try my best. Thank you. Ciao.
I'm sure he will try his best, Alan Smith. What would you make to that last point from Vieri that, you know, Italy impressed so much in the group stage? Austria gave them a real fright, but as a group of players in that dressing room, do you think that might actually now prepare them well for the quarterfinals and what might come after that?
I think so, yeah, because they did kind of ease through the group stage without probably switching into top gear. So when they are pushed all the way, as they were tonight, and they dig deep and they come through it, that gives you even more confidence, you know, the fact that it didn't come easy. They weren't at the best at times, but they still found a way. And that is a great thing to have within the squad, not the starting 11 so much as the squad, the substitutes bench, the fact that Mancini can look behind him and think, OK, we're going to change it now, things aren't happening, and it proves enough. So, such a difficult game for them tonight. They came through it, and you saw the scenes afterwards, all in the group, the little circle and everything. They're absolutely buzzing within that that squad.
It did seem at times that Italy were there for the taking. They weathered that storm, and I'm sure that will grow in confidence for them in camp. But a word on Austria, because I thought some of their players were exceptional. Lehner, I mean, he's as hard as nails, isn't he? Alaba, who just got absolutely everywhere. And then there was that Arnautovic goal that was offside, and you thought that they were going to be celebrating going ahead at that point.
Yeah, do you know what? I picked up something in your commentary, Alan Smith, when they had that goal, marginal but correctly disallowed for offside, and then they had a penalty given which was also offside. And you said at that moment that Austria are beginning to believe. And it did feel at that stage of the game that if anyone was going to win it in the 90 minutes, that it was going to be Austria.
Yeah, I mean, they were taking chances. They were committing lots of men forward. And Italy actually couldn't cope with it. So although it's been a fantastic victory for them, defensively, they weren't as tight as I thought they might be when 2-0 ahead. You know, let's shut up shop. They couldn't. All credit for that goes to Austria and their kind of determination, never say die attitude. But yeah, there was some magnificent performances within Austria tonight. And for Franco Foda, he couldn't have asked for any more.
No.
He'd just have to hold his hands up and say, you know, on the night we were done by a little bit more quality, a bit of bad luck on our part at times. But his lads, as they say, gave it everything.
First ever knockout stage game at the Euro for Austria. By the way, for Italy, and this stat is something which I think Roberto Mancini will, of course, hope will be extended. They are 31 games unbeaten now, which is a new record for the Italian national team, beating the one set under Vittorio Pozzo between 1935 and 1939. That is the type of run now that Italy are on. It's pretty remarkable, Alan.
Well, it's a great thing for the lads involved as well. You know, if that doesn't get beaten, and if they manage to extend that now in this tournament, there's a chance that that won't get beaten again, maybe for another 50, 60, 70 years. So for the boys involved in this tournament, it's great for them to have that, to go down into the history books.
Sure, they will have big smiles on their face. Commiserations to Austria, who gave an awful lot to Euro 2020. They are out in the last 16. Italy through, as I've mentioned, to face Belgium or Portugal in the quarterfinals in Munich. That is going to be some tie. So what happened in the first round of 16 clash? Well, it came at the Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam. Denmark were brilliant. They put on a wonderful dominant display against Wales.
Damsgaard leaving it for Dolberg. Looks for the chance to shoot, and he takes it. Finds the bottom corner. Denmark strike first. Martin Brathwaite having a run at Rodon, sending it across. Williams away, straight into the feet of Dolberg. My goodness me, it was on a plate for the day. Could get worse for Wales here. And Myler makes it three to cap an outstanding performance. And Denmark's wonderful story is going to continue at this European Championship. And a challenge from Harry Wilson there, which has drawn a straight red card. And Wales have a player sent off for the second time at the tournament. Naylor sends it in. Brathwaite with a chance. Brathwaite buries it. And the goal has been given. There is a fourth goal for Denmark. A goal for Martin Brathwaite. Further misery for Wales. There goes the final whistle. Another night of celebration for Danish football.
They were absolutely terrific. And just to put it into some perspective, Denmark, the first team to score four or more goals in consecutive matches in European Championship history, because, of course, they knocked four past Russia in their final group game to even make the last 16. And their 4-0 victory against Wales was the joint second biggest ever win in the knockout stage of a Euro, Alan Smith. They were absolutely magnificent in Amsterdam.
Yeah, they were inspired, weren't they? I mean, Wales started well, in all fairness. Gareth Bale seemed like a man possessed. He wanted to make things happen for his team. He was driving forward, clipping balls towards teammates. He didn't quite have the support on the day. But then they faded. Denmark found their feet and they never looked back, did they? Some terrific football, some terrific goals. Brilliantly taken. They've got the momentum. They've got the belief. The crowd, the fans are behind them. Obviously, there were a lot more Danish fans within the stadium than there were Welsh ones, and that maybe did help them. The football, though, that they played, yeah, it was compelling stuff. And, you know, they go forward like Italy with lots of confidence.
The way they managed to keep as well Bale and Ramsey quiet, that was some achievement.
Certainly was. And Kasper Dolberg, as you mentioned, Lindsay, was magnificent. He was their star man. And he said the fans did help push his team forward because plenty made the trip to Amsterdam from Copenhagen.
You felt it straight away when you came in and you saw all the red shirts and stuff. Yeah, you know, as you say, it feels like a home game in this stadium, which is very special to me. It's fantastic. Yeah, obviously it always helps when you score, but you know, it's very easy to come into this team. It's such a strong group of guys, and yeah, you know, I'm just very proud of being a part of this group. We're scoring four goals, and it's quite good, I would say. So yeah, if we just keep on scoring and defending like we did today, it's looking good.
Kasper Dolberg, he's still only 23, Alan Smith, and given that he made his senior football debut, I think, 6 years ago, and as he mentioned there, of course, he really came to the fore at Ajax, and he was playing back in his former home stadium. He took his goals superbly, and given he was only in the team because Yusuf Poulsen was injured, you sense that everything is going Denmark's way at the moment. Everyone that comes in seems to make that positive impact.
I mean, the coach would have been a little bit worried about it, how it was going to pan out without the experience of Poulsen. And then the youngster steps forward and answers a lot of questions and maybe answered some doubts within himself. You know, could he lead the line? Could he grab a goal or two? So he'll be full of it moving forward. I don't know how serious the injury to Poulsen is, but he'll take some shifting now, won't he, after that brace?
I did think that Christensen had another exemplary game.
Yeah, he was magnificent. We're actually going to hear from Kasper Schmeichel in a moment about a tactical switch that Denmark made, which proved to be inspired, and Andreas Christensen was a major part of that. Lindsay, you were at UEFA's Football Village in London again, though, and just after the win, you spoke to a rather excited Denmark fan.
There we go. Hey! This is amazing. I actually think that Denmark is going to win the whole thing.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not in doubt, actually.
And what is it about Denmark this time? Do you think it's that factor of galvanising after Eriksen?
We don't have the best players in the world, but we have the best team in the world. Because these guys are closer than any other team in the world, at least on a national level. It's amazing. The defence is amazing. We don't have the biggest goal scorers in the world. The defence, we have Schmeichel on goal, and we're going to take it the whole way like in 92.
But even you couldn't have expected 4-0 in this one.
Not 4-0, no. Like, we're a good defensive team, but we have shown we can also do offense. This is amazing, and we look forward to the next game, beating Holland.
Who was your star of the match?
Our star of the match is Dahlberg, of course, yeah. Scored two goals, and he plays on his home turf in Amsterdam, and yeah, he really played a good game.
I think the Czech Republic fans might have a bit of a question talking about beating the Netherlands in the next round, given they haven't even played in their last 16 games so far. But you could hear what it meant to him and those Danish fans in the background. What's it been like for day one of the knockouts? Has the atmosphere in the fan village been different to the group stage now it's really getting serious?
Oh, it has. And it was brilliant. We had so many Danes at the UEFA Football Village, which is near Tower Bridge. You looked across, I thought there'd be more Wales fans, but there are actually more Danes there. We do lots of TV close-ups for the big screen, and we actually caught some nail biting for the first day today.
Really?
So I think that says it all.
It certainly does. I imagine there will have been a few more during that game between Italy and Austria even. So, delighted fans in London, as Lindsay just mentioned. How has that result gone down in Denmark, though? Well, our reporter Sture Sando is in Copenhagen now. And Sture, what's the reaction been there to this incredible scoreline?
It's, Copenhagen and Denmark is just ignited completely. Amsterdam as well, which you can probably tell.
Yeah,
it's just amazing. Everybody thought that we were out after losing 1-0 to Finland on that horrible evening on match day one, and now the team is just getting better and better one match at a time. And you know, people, the players coming in are performing. Dahlberg tonight, it's just amazing, and people are starting to believe in a big result now.
26th of June, always a special date for Denmark, of course. It was the day 29 years ago you won Euro 92. And here you are, you've just scored four goals in the knockout stage of a Euro match. Do you really believe there is a sense of belief in Denmark now that they can, you know, perhaps go to a semi-final, maybe even to the final, maybe even win it?
Well, there's definitely a feeling that the Danish team could create something big. Actually, they already did, because looking back, the last time Denmark won a round of 16 at a major tournament was in 1998, and the last time they won a round of 16 match at a Euro was actually in 1992. So we're not used to getting past the groups, actually, but not the round of 16 at all.
Fans now, I guess, will be beginning to be greedy in Denmark. They're off to Baku. Is there any sense of who they would rather face between the Netherlands and the Czech Republic?
To be honest, I don't think they care much about that, because
I thought that might Denmark be your answer.
yeah. But the way Denmark play right now is, it doesn't really matter. Actually, they've been struggling against teams not coming that much forward.
Yeah.
And if Holland is going to be the opponent, they will definitely be a team that wants to control the match and push forward. And that's good for Denmark, I think. On the other hand, the Czechs shouldn't be underestimated if it's them. You know, in a quarterfinal, there's no bad teams. Everybody deserves to be there, and I just think that they are eager to play as soon as possible. Now they have to wait for a week, but on the other hand, with all the injuries we saw tonight, a week of rest come in handy.
Sture Sander there, our Danish reporter who's been covering the team throughout Euro 2020. Thanks very much for coming on.
You're so welcome.
Always top insight from Sture. Alan, even before this last 16 match, he told us that sales of Denmark kits have sold out in Denmark. That's how much the public are behind their team now. And from what you saw, this group of players who, of course, went through something so terrible a couple of weeks back, you can see that spirit and unity as well as the class that they have on the pitch. And it's potentially for the rest of the teams that you're in quite a dangerous mix, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's galvanised them. There's no question about that. They would be giving their all for Christian Eriksen, trying to do their very best for him. And that's carrying them along on a wave of emotion almost. But you can't progress just on emotion alone. You've got to have quality and composure. And they showed both those things today to comfortably beat Wales. Quality that maybe we didn't think they had. But the Eriksen, you know, incident obviously has been the catalyst for them. And they'll be hoping that they go all the way like they did in 92. I was a part of the England team that we drew in the opening game, 0-0. Yeah, it certainly wasn't the best Denmark side that there's ever been, but they ended up winning it. So you just never know, do you?
And I think this was their first knockout stage victory since that final success against Germany all those years ago in Euro 1992. Well, one man who was quite quiet in Amsterdam was the Danish goalkeeper Kasper Schmeichel. He says a tactical switch, as I mentioned, early on in this game, helped decide the tie.
Performance of the team, absolutely fantastic. Can't praise the lads enough. It was a tough opening period, first 15, 20 minutes. We struggled to get our rhythm. You know, both Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey were getting into little pockets and causing us some trouble. Then we changed our system slightly. We moved moved Andreas up into a central midfield role, stiffened that up a little bit, and that helped with the stability, and we kind of got our groove back, and then we score the goal, and obviously that changes things for Wales. They have to play different after that. Yeah, for us, just a great night. I think if you've seen the performances in every game, this is what this team can do. This is a very well-organised, well-functioning team, but the strength of this team is the collective. You see today, the players that come on today and contribute that haven't played a single minute yet, they come on in a game like this and contribute the way they did. That's what being a full squad is all about, and for us, you know, another one of our strengths is not getting ahead of ourselves. So tonight, we enjoy tonight because these occasions come around so rarely. And then tomorrow, we dust ourselves down. We try and get everyone together and assess the damage of tonight. And then we go again.
Kasper Schmeichel there. As for Wales, their superstar forward Gareth Bale gave his reaction after the defeat.
Not how we wanted the game to go. From our point of view, we started very well the first 25 minutes. Conceded the goal and game changed a little bit. I think we came out second half trying to play and unfortunately made a mistake to concede the goal, which I guess killed the momentum on our side. And I think one thing we can't fault is the effort the boys shown, and that's the minimum requirement for this group. And I'm proud of them all still.
I felt a bit sorry for Gareth Bale there, Alan. You could hear the Denmark fans in the background cheering, and he has to do the post-match interview as his team have just been knocked out. What did you make of Wales' performance, and what will they take from Euro 2020, another trip to the knockouts?
Exactly. I think many of us thought that they hadn't quite got the chemistry that they showed 5 years ago in France, but they proved us all wrong to get as far as they did. Obviously, they have not progressed to the semis in the way that they did, but it all kind of stacked up against them. Injuries, mistakes, just at the wrong time, and in the end it all got a bit ragged, a bit messy for them. So it's an unfortunate way to go out. You don't want to get on the end of a beating in that way, but they can have no regrets. They've done ever so well.
Yeah.
Done ever so well.
So two teams through to the quarterfinals, Denmark and Italy. Plenty more to come as we preview two more round of 16 ties, including a huge match between Belgium and Portugal.
This is the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Okay, Saturday was good. Sunday promises to match it. These are the two last 16 ties. Netherlands against the Czech Republic in Budapest at 6 p.m. Central European Summer Time. And then Belgium against Portugal in Seville. Let's start our preview with that huge game. So many superstars on show. And will one of the star forwards on display in Spain be their country's hero?
It's Ronaldo. He does it again. It's cruel on Hungary, but Portugal, the 2016 winners, are up and running.
Patrice Mertens, it's come to Lukaku, who would not miss from there.
It's into Diogo Jota, good chance here for Portugal. Ronaldo, the perfect counter-attack from Portugal.
Pulled through here for Lukaku to seal the deal. Few hotter strikers in Europe right now. Was there ever going to be any doubt? Two from the penalty spot for Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal a level.
Ronaldo and Lukaku. And I just had a quick look, Alan and Lindsay, about the other superstars on show in this game. It's ridiculous. You've got Bernardo Silva, Ruben Diaz, Bruno Fernandes might not even start. Eden Hazard, Kevin De Bruyne, Thibaut Courtois, take your pick. This is... Well, this could easily be a semi-final or the final, couldn't it? Not just the last 16.
Yeah, no, it could be. It could be. And we want to see the top players, don't we, in these competitions? So often you go into tournaments and one or two world stars have picked up injuries and they're not there or they're not at the peak fitness and form. But we've got quite a few capable. You know, some still haven't caught fire. Mbappe has bits and pieces. But so many players within this match you're talking about that could easily prove the match winner.
You mentioned there, Chris, about Bruno Fernandes, and you do wonder whether he will appear in this game. An interesting article out this week, Manchester United, he is the main man, isn't he? And he's sort of in Cristiano Ronaldo's shadow here, but you do wonder if there might be some season fatigue at play too.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, Renato Sanchez, who was excellent off the bench for the first two games, Alan, then got the start in that extraordinary game against France, and plenty in Portugal suggesting that Renato Sanches will again get the nod.
Yeah, I mean, for so many years now, he's been billed as the wonder boy, hasn't he? And I mean, he's not a boy anymore,
no.
So it's time to deliver for him and deliver that talent to the big stage. Clearly, you know, he's got ability. He's always had that, but he's not had the application. So this might just be his tournament.
And, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, we have to talk about him. 5 goals, of course. Now on 109 international goals, level with Ali Dye as the all-time leading goal scorer in men's international football. If he gets one more in Seville, that'll be a new record. And for someone who played up front for England and Arsenal, we know that Ronaldo does like the records, but that will be a big one, right? To be the all-time top scorer in international football ever.
Massive. Absolutely massive, yeah. And who's going to catch him?
That's a very good question.
Who's going to catch him? His dedication to the job has just been sensational. He's still got it. He never loses that appetite, that hunger, you know, the willingness to make sacrifices in his life, in what he eats and drinks and how he trains, the sleep he gets, you know, going well into his late 30s. Who knows when he's going to pack up now. He still looks as fit as a fiddle. So what a career, what a player, what a personality.
And he wants to win Euro again, having come off, of course, in the final. I think you were at that game in France in Euro 2016, and then basically acted like the coach on the touchline, which was something to behold. Okay, from Belgium's point of view, we can hear from their boss, Roberto Martinez, in a moment. But first, here is the defender, Toby Alderweireld, on facing the defending champions.
The team is very compact. They know how to play big games in big tournaments. A lot of experience as well, so I think we have to be top to beat them. Of course, everyone talks about Cristiano Ronaldo. We know he's one of the best in the world, but not only him. I think they have a lot of quality around him as well, who create chances for him. So again, we have to be top to beat them. I can't talk how they feel, how they think. The only thing I can say is that we are very hungry. The desire is unbelievable with us to achieve big things for our country and for this team.
We will have to be patient against a really good, resolute and well defensive structured Portugal team. I just feel we need to be ourselves and we need to be trying to improve in what we did in the previous three games. We shouldn't go any further. This group has grown a lot in that World Cup, and I just feel that now it's just the small things that we can improve from the games that we played.
Roberto Martinez there. Let's catch up with the Belgian team reporter, Elisa Saliou, who's been at the training camp throughout Euro 2020. Thanks for joining us on the show, Elisa.
Thanks for having me.
So Belgium, they were absolutely brilliant in the group stage. They must be looking forward to this enormous round of 16 clash, perhaps the biggest last 16 clash, let's be honest, against Portugal.
Yes, exactly. It's going to be an amazing game, I think, for all football fans to watch. All of the players are looking forward to it. Tension is getting high, but it's going to be an amazing game.
And Belgium have had to do a lot of travelling. They've been to St. Petersburg twice, Copenhagen, and now, of course, Seville. But they are, I'm right in saying that their training base is back in Belgium and you've been there over the last couple of days.
Exactly. They've been training in Belgium. They've been doing special things for recovery. So I think they're fit and they're ready to go.
And who have you been catching up with ahead of this last 16 match?
I've had a talk with Thomas Meunier and with Axel Witsel. Both of them really looking forward to playing against Portugal. I've also went to a press conference with Thibaut Courtois and Romelu Lukaku. And of course, our coach Martinez.
And what's been the mood amongst the players and actually the Belgian public that Belgium topped the group and then ran into Portugal? I mean, from a neutral point of view, probably one of the hardest third place teams that they could have got.
Exactly. And if you've watched the games of Group F, it was all over the place. At one point, we were playing Hungary, but then it switched to Germany. Then at a certain point, it was Portugal. So, very exciting. The players actually watched the game as well. I had a talk about it with Axel Witsel, and even he said that, just emotions were all over the place. But at the end of the day, Thomas Meunier ended up saying that whoever they would have played, for them, it wouldn't have really made a big difference because otherwise you would have met the bigger groups later stage. So, they're quite keen on playing Portugal.
Kevin De Bruyne, of course, the eyes of the world will be on him, given the amount of superstars who are going to be on show. He is perhaps the biggest one for Belgium. Presumably, he's absolutely fine to start now, right? After what?
Exactly.
Playing,
Luckily, we've been able to prepare him in the last three games. Yeah, he's fit. He's ready to start. He's also looking forward to him. I've seen him. He seemed happy during training. They were making jokes. They were laughing. They were smiling. So I hope he'll be at a stop, but I expect nothing less.
And Romelu Lukaku, just finally, what mood is he in? Because I saw some quotes from Roberto Martinez in the press conference you were at saying that he believes he's turned into the best striker in the world since moving to Inter in Italy. What was Romelu Lukaku saying? Because if Belgium are to progress, one would imagine he might need to be the guy that scores the goals.
Exactly, and I have to say it was quite an amusing press conference because Romelu Lukaku, he just beamed of self-confidence. He mentioned that before when people would talk about him, they would say, yeah, he's in the best shape of his life, he's in the best form of his life. But if journalists would talk about Lewandowski or Ronaldo or just other big stars, they would say world-class players. But with Romelu, it would always be at the top of his game or in the shape of his life. And he said that now he feels he's proven it at Inter that he's also, you know, one of those great players and that he should be called a world-class player so that he feels like maybe at this Euros he can prove it.
Very difficult to argue against that as well, let's be honest, isn't it, given how many goals he scores. From a Belgian perspective, which Portugal player is the most worrying or the one that you and perhaps the players are most afraid of?
Well, I think everybody knows what name I'm going to say. Ronaldo, of course. But what I've also heard of a lot of the players, and I agree with it 100%, is that they've said Portugal is not only Cristiano Ronaldo, and it might be a big mistake on our part if we only focus on him, because Portugal, they also, you know, they have Moutinho, they have Silva, they have Pepe, they have such amazing players that have individual quality that if you only focus on Ronaldo and you lose your eyes on the others, that itself could, you know, decide the game. So, of course, you can give Ronaldo space. You have to play very compact, but, you know, also keep your eyes out because Portugal has an extremely talented squad.
We're asking everyone for score predictions tonight. I know that is not the easiest thing, but your score prediction for Portugal against Belgium?
I think it's very difficult. I hope it won't go to penalties, but let me just say 2-2.
2-2. I love this slight pessimism, despite the fact Belgium being so good.
That's something that all Belgians have. Talk okay. to anyone in Belgium, and we're pessimists at heart because we don't like to be disappointed. But at the end of the day, I do think we will go through to the next round, but it's going to be one hell of a game.
Love that. That is a great insight into the Belgium psyche as well. Thank you very much, Alyssa, for coming back on the Euro Show.
Thank you for having me.
Alyssa Salier there, UEFA's Belgium reporter. Lindsay, you've been crunching the numbers ahead of this huge tie.
I have. The head-to-head record is so evenly matched that it sets this one up to be so tight. Belgium, 5 wins compared to Portugal's 6 wins. There have been 7 draws. And even if you take this down to goals, 22 goals for Belgium, 21 for Portugal. So, so tight. Something as well that I've picked up on, Alan, Martinez in an interview said it wasn't realistic to practice penalties, but we've already had one game with Italy-Austria go to extra time. This one could. What do you make of that comment?
I suppose he's referring to the fact you can't replicate the pressure. I mean, we've had it in England, haven't we, for so many years. Some coaches have practiced them, others haven't. It's down to personal preference, and Roberto Martinez obviously feels that there's no point. I mean, he's got enough players that know how to tuck away a penalty. So I think he'll just have faith in his players that come the crunch, come the big moment, they can come good.
Belgium against Portugal, cannot wait for this. 2100 CEST in Seville. The winner faces Italy in Munich in the quarter final. Also on Sunday, how about this? Netherlands play the Czech Republic in their round of 16 time Budapest. The Dutch come into the last 16 as the top scorers after the group stage, and defender Daley Blind has been speaking about the importance of striker Memphis Depay.
Marlon slides it in. Depay, 1-0 to the Netherlands from one end of the pitch to the other.
Yeah, I think Memphis is a great player. I think he showed how important he is in a lot of games for us. I think he's a player with special qualities. You can always play him the ball, and it's always a surprise what's happening. He can do magical things with the ball in attack, and he brings us so much options in attack, and he scores so much goals and assists. So in the end, he's a great player for us, and I'm happy for him as well that he is doing so well.
Former England striker Alan Smith joining Lindsay Hooper and myself, Chris Parrott, tonight on the Euro Show. We heard Blind there on Memphis Depay, Alan. Now, I've seen a quote from Ruud van Nistelrooy, of course, a fantastic forward in his day. He's now part of the Dutch coaching setup alongside Frank de Boer. And he said that in addition to Memphis and Genie Wijnaldum, he said we've got Wout Weghorst as a classic centre forward. We also have Daniel Marlon and Quincy Promise and Cody Hakpo to bring in as well, in terms of speaking about a different type of forwards they have. I just wonder how important you think that is, as a not just as one or two attackers, but in a squad, if you can have five or six who all have different attributes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you don't want two or three of the same, do you? You want a variety there, something that's going to ask different questions of defenders. So they sound quite happy, don't they?
With
their lot and the top man, Memphis Depay, is delivering, isn't he? After many years of us thinking he's a bit of a maverick, you can't depend on him. I mean, you couldn't nail him down. What position is he? He's one of those that likes to drift into unusual areas, but he's playing as well now, I think, as he ever has done. He's at the peak of his powers, so that's a great weapon for the Netherlands.
It's the backup as well, isn't it, with Wijnaldum, for instance, who's been scoring. I mean, it's the Netherlands attack that's most frightening about them, I think. They've had about 30 chances in games so far, and if you're in the Czech Republic, I'm sure that's something you're focusing on, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they just pile men forward, don't they? kind of, it's a gung-ho approach coming into the tournament. I don't think many people were tipping the Netherlands, but you always get one of these teams that just go up to the top of the pack and make everyone sit up and take notice. So, yeah, such an attacking approach, and it's great to watch.
Certainly is. The Dutch have been brilliant. What about the Czech Republic perspective then? Well, UEFA's team reporter Ondrej Zlamal is sat inside the Puskás Arena in Budapest ahead of this huge match, and he joins us now. Hello again, Ondrej.
Hello. Nice to hear you again.
Nice to hear you too. How are things? The Czech Republic are in Budapest. You're at the stadium. How are they feeling ahead of this enormous round of 16 clash?
For them, for most of them, is the best match of their careers, and at least in the national team, the same for the coach. The Czechs are really excited. Plus, there's a very good history of the Czech team playing against Netherlands, so just they have a lot of motivation. And media mentioned a lot of big wins the Czechs achieved against Netherlands. But, you know, these boys, these players were boys when we defeated Netherlands at the UEFA Euro 2004. The captain, Darida, mentioned that he was a schoolboy and he was watching the game with the other boys, and they discussed it throughout the next day at school instead of lessons. So just it was like, it's for them, it's too far away, but they still remember the motivation. It's like a giant game in our football history. So just there's a chance to repeat this for them as the idols did in 2004.
I'm not surprised. That 3-2 win, one of the best games ever at a Euro. You know, talking about that run to the semi-finals in 2004, Ondrej, I had a look back. So the population of the Czech Republic is just under 11 million, yet you won it in 1976 as part of Czechoslovakia. You were runners-up in 1996 when, of course, you almost beat Germany in the final. You made the semi-finals in 2004 and the quarter-finals in 2012. I mean, it's an astonishingly good record. How important is the European Championships to people and to football in the Czech Republic?
This is a tremendous record, isn't it? You know, we've been to every tournament. Who can say that? You know, look at Scotland, for example. They would... I didn't mention that when I was in Glasgow, but we went... I don't know why, but it's just... We went to every tournament and we are really proud. And tomorrow, because Budapest is quite close to Czech Republic, tomorrow thousands of fans will go to the stadium. They bought all the tickets available and they are on their way, and I've already seen the pictures. I think it will be a very emotional moment because the players played for 2 years under the closed stadiums without any attendance. They could listen to each other. They listened to the coach. Now they will be reunited with a big crowd of Czech fans, and it's going to be really emotional. Some of the players even said they don't remember when they played in front of the full capacity stadium. Tomáš Holeš, when they was asked, he thought for 10 seconds and then he admitted he doesn't remember. Wow. So just for them, it would be a fantastic atmosphere. You know, for us, we are really, really proud about that.
And you're inside the stadium now. This is your first experience of the Puskás Arena. How does it look? It's, of course, as you mentioned, it's going to be packed for this huge last 16 game.
It's simply beautiful. I think all the fans who will arrive and see it for the first time, they'll be surprised. It's quite similar experience. I'm sitting now in one of the highest rows where the media sector is, and it's a really similar similar to Wembley experience when you look down to the pitch. I cannot imagine that. Even if it's full of fans, it must be a fantastic experience to play at the stadium. I heard about it, but, you know, to see it in reality, to see the beauty of this venue, it's something totally different. And I shared some photo on Twitter when I entered the stadium, and all the Czech fans went, wow, and these ones who are traveling, they are even more excited now after seeing the photos.
Our social media topic for the show is we're asking people about players that can transform a game in an instant. Now, from a Czech point of view, in this current 11, who is the guy that, you know, whilst everybody else might be going about their normal business, who is the player that in just a second can potentially fire the Czech Republic into the quarterfinals?
I would say Tomáš Souček. He had a great chance at Wembley to equalize, and this man is the leader. He's the motivator. He is everywhere. He is running his numbers. He's always ready to run everywhere to help the team. He was very unlucky not to have scored at Wembley in the last game, and he's capable of doing things. We are underdogs. The Czechs know that the Dutch, they scored 8 goals. You know, they created a lot of chances. It must have been a bit scary to study the homework when the videos from the previous games. I guess this was no fun for the Czech players, you know, to see Depay and all the other players running wingers. They also rotate in the attack, so just difficult. They are really difficult to stop. But I think this Tomáš Souček and Vladimír Coufal and all the players as a team can go and help Patrik Schick. I think Patrik Schick will be very well covered because he has shown his abilities.
Yep.
But Tomáš Souček from the air after the set piece, I would bet on him if I was supposed to say one name that can fire the Czech Republic into quarterfinals.
Andre, fantastic answer. I was just going to quickly ask you before you go for a score prediction, if that's okay. I know this is hard.
Score prediction, this is hard. I would think this is hard. I tell you, when I came to Budapest, I went to the reception and I showed my accreditations, everything, and the guy goes, what I would bet. He asked me the same question and he said, I have bet 1-1, what do you think about my prediction? And I said, yeah, this is a quite good prediction, 1-1 or 2-2, and then we will see what will happen in the extra time.
Andrej Lamau predicting a very late evening on Sunday in Budapest. Andrej, thank you very much for coming on the show, and go out and enjoy the Hungarian capital.
It was a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Andrej Lamau there, always great to hear him. So the Netherlands against the Czech Republic is the early match on Sunday. And after that, Belgium against Portugal in the south of Spain. As the last 16 continues on Monday, it is Croatia against Spain in Copenhagen and France against Switzerland in Bucharest. And then on Tuesday, the last 16 comes to a close. The late game on Tuesday is Sweden against Ukraine at Hampden Park in Glasgow. The early match is at Wembley. It is England against Germany. And the England and Liverpool midfielder Jordan Henderson has been speaking today about facing Germany in the last 16.
Well, it's exciting. It's a huge game and one that we'll be looking forward to. So we knew whatever team would face, it was going to be a big challenge. And Germany will certainly be that, so we need to prepare well, be ready for next week and give everything against them. Well, they're still a very good side. You know, look at the players, they've got quality all over the pitch. Again, it's going to be a very tough test. In games like this, it's not necessarily about form, it's about whoever's better on the night and whoever puts the better performance in is going to have more chance of winning, and we need to make sure that we're 100% ready, and I'm sure we will be.
Jordan Henderson there. Alan Smith, the former England striker, is alongside myself, Chris Parrott. I guess whether Jordan Henderson starts or not is one of the main decisions that Gareth Southgate has to make.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when he came on against the Czech Republic, he just offered something a bit different, and I thought the chemistry was better because you got Rice and Phillips and they both do similar sorts of roles. I think Henderson gives more depth to that central midfield and he looks forward quicker with those longer passes. So it's all about his fitness. There's no doubting his ability and his place in that side, his importance within the squad. That'd be a fascinating one, actually. There's one or two big calls for Gareth Southgate, and that being one of them.
Is one of the other big calls, Alan, to do with Bukayo Saka, because he was so good in the last game.
Yeah, he was, Lindsay, and that's another tester. Phil Foden's done nothing wrong, has he? He was unlucky to get brought off against Scotland. I think he's done ever so well. It might just be that Southgate goes back to that slightly extra bit of experience from Foden, who's a fantastic talent himself. I mean, it's enviable choice for Southgate. Who knows? He might come up with a little surprise for us. He might pick Jadon Sancho or somebody. Yeah. You never know.
I think with the ones playing in Germany against the Germans.
Yeah. I mean, as for the result, who knows? It's not the best Germany side we've ever seen. But then again, it's a Germany team that it's in their DNA. They can handle tournaments. And it's who handles the situation at Wembley better on Tuesday night, I think, that might decide it.
There is a fantastic article by Philip Röber on the Euro 2020 app about what this fixture means to Germany and how actually for a lot of the players... it isn't perhaps their greatest match, whereas I think for a lot of England supporters it is. And when I think about England-Germany, I don't want to give away our age too much, but I think of Euro 96 and many people think of the World Cup in 1990. For a lot of these England players, Alan, I just wonder if this fixture, if they know the enormity of it because it's in the last 16, but whether they truly remember the great rivalries, because these two nations haven't met in a final tournament for 11 years.
Mm. They haven't got any scars, have they, from it? And I don't think they've got any fear. They won't be intimidated by Germany without question. You know, we all remember Bloemfontein in South Africa. Yeah. Still have bad dreams about that.
You know, as you said that, I thought, oh, yeah, I do, yeah.
I've never been so depressed as at the final whistle there. The old ghost goal, Frank Lampard's and all the rest of it. But yeah, I think the current crop of boys, you know, they won't give that a second thought. They've all got confidence in their own abilities, and hopefully that's going to stand England in good stead once that first whistle blows.
And Germany, of course, have scored plenty of goals and will be confident having just about made it through their group, because Group F was absolutely thrilling. So we have seen, Alan, you have seen Italy through and you have seen Denmark through. How impressed were you just coming back to those games quickly with those two performances? And do you think those two could potentially go all the way?
They could. Italy in a good position. They had to fight really hard to get through, so that shows that they've got the metal. Denmark have got the momentum. Who knows?
Who knows? We shall find out. Alan Smith, thank you very much for joining us. Lindsay Hooper, thank you as well.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening to the Euro Show once more. We are on air shortly after the final match of Every Night has finished. And remember to subscribe to the official Euro 2020 podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. We'll be back on Sunday night for more Euro 2020 action. For now, it is goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.